ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेष। पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 4 एंड देयर आर अ फ्यू वर्सेस लीडिंग अप टू टेक्स्ट 6 व्हिच वी विल चैंट टुगेदर But there are no purports, so I'm going to sing those alone. I think, where did he leave off yesterday? Does anyone remember? I think he read...
Text 5.
Right. Okay, so maybe we're okay. Did he sing the verses or no? I don't remember. Anyway. Nedur dundubhayo divya gandharva nanratur jaguhu rishayas charana siddhas tushtuvuhu purushottamam योऽसौ ग्राह स वै सद्यः परमाश्चर्यरूपधृक् मुक्तो देवलशापेन हुहुर्गन्धर्वसत्तमः प्रणम्य शिरसाधीशम् उत्तमश्लोकमव्ययम् अगायत यशोधाम कीर्तन्यगुणसत्कथम् सोऽनुकम्पित ईशेन परिक्रम्य प्रणम्यतम् लोकस्य पश्यतो लोकं स्वं अगान् मुक्तकिल्बिषः। That means, there was a beating of kettle drums in the heavenly planets. The inhabitants of Gandharvaloka began to sing, dance and sing, while great sages and inhabitants of Charanaloka and Siddhaloka offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Purushottama. This is when Gajendra was delivered. The best of the Gandharvas, King Huhu, having been cursed by Devalamuni, became a crocodile. Now, having been delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he assumed a very beautiful form as a Gandharva. Understanding by whose mercy this had happened, he immediately offered his respectful obeisances with his head and began chanting prayers just suitable for the Transcendental Lord, the Supreme Eternal, who is worshipped by the choicest verses. Having been favored by the causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and having regained his original form, King Huhu circumambulated the Lord and offered his obeisances. Then, in the presence of all the demigods, headed by Brahma, he returned to Gandharvaloka. He had been freed of all sinful reactions. Is it text number 6 or no? Okay. Gajendro Bhagavat Sparshat Vimukto Agnana Bandhanat Praptaha Bhagavata Rupam Pitavasaha Chaturbhujaha Gajendro Bhagavat Sparshad Vimukto Agnana Bandhanat Prapto Bhagavato Rupam Pitavasashchaturbhujaha. Let us say the word for word for both texts. Gajendra, the king of the elephants, Gajendra. Bhagavat Sparashat, because of being touched by the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vimuktaha, was immediately freed. Agnana Bandhanat, from all kinds of ignorance, especially the bodily concept of life. Praptaha, achieved. Bhagavataha, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rupam, the same bodily features. Pitavasaha, wearing yellow garments. Chaturbhujaha, and four-handed, with conch shell, disc, club, and lotus. Saha, this elephant, Gajendra, Vaye, indeed, Puravam, formerly, Abhud, was, Raja, a king, Pandya, of the country known as Pandya, Dravida Sattamaha, the best of those born in Dravida Desha, South India, Indradyumna, by the name Maharaj Indradyumna, iti, thus, khyataha, celebrated, Vishnu Vrata Parayanaha, who was a first-class Vaishnava, always engaged in the service of the Lord. I'll read both translations. Because Gajendra, the king of the elephants, had been touched directly by the hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was immediately freed of all material ignorance and bondage. Thus he received the salvation of Sarupya Mukti, in which he achieved the same bodily features as the Lord, being dressed in yellow garments and possessing four hands. Text 7. Thus, this Gajendra had formerly been a Vaishnava and the king of the country known as Pandya, which is in the province of Dravida, South India. In his previous life, he was known as Indrajumna Maharaja. His purport to text 6. If one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead by having his gross body touched by the Lord, his body turns into his spiritual body, and he can go back home, back to Godhead. Gajendra assumed a spiritual body when his body was touched by the Lord. Similarly, Dhruva Maharaj assumed his spiritual body in this way. Archana Paddhati, daily worship of the deity, provides an opportunity to touch the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus it enables one to be fortunate enough to get a spiritual body and go back to Godhead. Not only by touching the body of the Supreme Lord, but simply by hearing about his pastimes, chanting his glories, touching his feet, and offering worship. In other words, by serving the Lord somehow or other, one is purified of material contamination. This is the result of touching the Supreme Lord. One who is a pure devotee, anyabhilashita shunyam, who acts according to the Shastra and the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, certainly becomes purified. Like Gajendra, he assumes a spiritual body and returns home, back to Godhead. I'm going to read a few verses ahead also up until text 10. There are no purports here. Se ekadaradhana kala atmavan grihita maunavrata ishwaram harim jatadharastaptapasaplutochatam samarshayam asakulachalashramah. Indrajumna Maharaj retired from family life and went to the Malaya hills, where he had a small cottage for his ashrama. He wore matted locks on his head and always engaged in austerities. Once, while observing a vow of silence, he was fully engaged in the worship of the Lord and absorbed in the ecstasy of love of Godhead. Yadrichaya tatra mahayasha munihi samagama chishyaganai parishritaha tam vikshitushnim akritarhanadikam rahasyupasinam rishishchukopaha. While Indrajit Maharaj was engaged in ecstatic meditation, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the great sage Agastya Muni arrived there, surrounded by his disciples. When the Muni saw that Maharaj Indrajumna, who was sitting in a secluded place, remained silent and did not follow the etiquette of offering him a reception, he was very angry. So there are a number of things here that are significant, beginning in text 5. So Nukambita Ishena, having been favored by the causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Anukampa. What does Anukampa mean? Huh? Say that again? Empathize, not maybe empathize, also compassion, namely, to feel for someone. In addition to feeling with someone, you feel for that person. So much so that you tremble. Anukampa means to tremble accordingly. Very strong feeling of sympathy, compassion. So this is what the Lord felt. So that was King Huhu. And then in today's verse, text number 6, for which there's a purport, Gajendra had been touched directly by the hands of the Supreme Lord, and he was immediately freed from all material ignorance and bondage. All of the acharyas commenting on this verse say that Gajendra achieved sarupya mukti, as Srila Prabhupada includes in his translation and purport here. And Srila Prabhupada goes on to mention that deity worship offers one the same opportunity. Those who are fortunate enough to be twice initiated in worshiping the deity, they can actually go back home, back to Godhead, just by touching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why does Srila Prabhupada mention Dhruva Maharaj here? He says Dhruva Maharaj assumed his spiritual body in this way. Does anyone remember the story, what happened? Dhruva. What happened? He was touched by the conch shell of the Lord as a blessing. And just by that alone, he was able to offer eloquent prayers. He became purified of all material contamination. So, archana paddhati, Srila Prabhupada says, a daily worship of the deity provides an opportunity to touch the body of the Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus it enables one to be fortunate enough to get a spiritual body and to go back home, back to Godhead. So the Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the gross body was touched, was because of being touched by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the sthula sharira, the gross material body of this elephant, Gajendra, was completely purified, spiritualized. And similarly, by that touch also, which is all spiritual, his subtle body, his antahakarana, was also purified of all ignorance. Ajnana bandhanat, vimukto ajnana bandhanat, means that he was freed from all sorts of bodily misconceptions of life. His words became pure, his thoughts became pure, his physical body became pure by the touch of the Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada also adds here that one who is a pure devotee, who acts according to Shastra and the words of the Supreme Lord, certainly becomes purified. He gets a spiritual body and goes back home, back to Godhead. Now the next thing is that this Gajendra was previously King Indrajumna, And he was living in Pandya. Pandya, Dragada Desha. Does anyone know where that is? South India. What part of South India? Garnath Raj, you should know. Across from you. Near Kerala, Tamil Nadu, in that area, in between. There are Malaya hills there. Therefore, they speak Malayalam. That area. And Kulashekhar Maharaj was also king there later. But this is before that, Indrajitna Maharaj. That whole area of the country was actually, Agastya Muni had his ashram there. So it's natural that Agastya Muni came to visit this king, Indrajitna. But he was deep in meditation. Who else did this happen to? Very similar story. Yeah, Parikshit Maharaj with Sringi, the Brahmin boy. So anyway, Maharaj Indrajitna was a great king, but when he was retired, he went to these hills and he was performing austerities, jatadhara. He was wearing jata on his head. Jata means dreadlocks in modern parlance. You've seen the yogis, they wrap them up on their head. Long dreadlocks. So he was doing Kulachala, was the name of his ashram, Kulachala. And he was Samarshayam Asa. He was doing nice worship of Achyuta. And he was Apluta. He was completely immersed in that puja, in that worship. But unfortunately, the Samuni arrived and he was offended. Chukopaha, it said. He became angry. And he cursed him to become this dull elephant. Why an elephant? Yeah, he thought Indrajitna Maharaj was... Although he was deeply absorbed in samadhi, concentration on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Muni thought that he was just dull, evidently. Anyway, these are some things here. Maybe we should read on to the next verse. Tasma imam shapa madad asadhur ayam duratma krita buddhiradya vipraivamanta vivshatam tamisram yatha gajastabdhamutsmatih saeva. Agastya Muni then spoke this curse against the king. This king Indrajitna is not at all gentle. Being low and uneducated, he has insulted a brahmana. May he therefore enter the region of darkness and receive the dull, dumb body of an elephant. Purport. An elephant is very strong. It has a very big body, and it can work very hard and eat a large quantity of food. But its intelligence is not at all commensurate with its size and strength. Thus, in spite of so much bodily strength, the elephant works as a menial servant for a human being. Agastya Muni thought it wise to curse the king to become an elephant, because the powerful king did not receive Agastya Muni as one is obliged to receive a brahmana. Yet, although Agastya Muni cursed Maharaj Indrajitna to become an elephant, the curse was indirectly a benediction, for by undergoing one life as an elephant, Maharaj Indrajitna, Indrajitna Maharaj, ended the reactions for all the sins of his previous life. Immediately after the expiry of this elephant's life, he was promoted to Vaikuntha Loka, to become a personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, in a body exactly like that of the Lord. This is called Sarupya Mukti. There are different kinds of liberation. When we talk of liberation, there are different kinds of liberation. Just like last night we were speaking, there are different kinds of pure devotees. There are different definitions of so many terms that we find in Srimad Bhagavatam, Uttama Adhikari, etc. There are different kinds. Different kinds of spiritual world. There are different kinds of Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are different kinds of devotees. Everything is variety. Variety is the mother of enjoyment for Krishna. So, similarly, there are different kinds of liberation. Chiefly, we say there are five or six kinds of liberation. What are those? And what do those mean? Yeah, actually, four or five different kinds, not five or six. So, Sayujya Mukti means to merge into the body of the Supreme Lord. And that is sometimes not accepted by the Vaishnavas, therefore, depending whether you accept Sayujya Mukti as real liberation or not. Because what happens if you accept Sayujya Mukti, then sometimes they fall down again. So, not really considered to be liberation. Interestingly, just as a point of note here, different Vaishnava acharyas, they have a slightly different conception of Sayujya Mukti than our acharyas do. Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas define Sayujya Mukti in the way that I just described. But Sri Vaishnavas and Madhva Vaishnavas, at least, they have a slightly different understanding of Sayujya Mukti. To them, in Sayujya Mukti, one becomes so much immersed in the service of the Supreme Lord that he acts as one or more of the senses of the Supreme Lord. Very different understanding. But anyway, as far as our acharyas go, Sayujya Mukti means Kevaladvaita Mukti, oneness with the, particularly merging into the Brahma Jyoti or dissolving oneself into the Supreme Lord. It actually cannot happen because we are eternally parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, so that's more or less a phantasmagoria, to use Prabhupada's terminology. So that's Sayujya Mukti. What is the next one? Sarashti. Sarashti Mukti means what? To have equal wealth as Lakshmipati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like in Tirumala, if you go to South India, they worship Narayana as Venkatesha, and is the wealthiest deity in India. So would you like that? Krishna will offer these liberations to his devotee. He will offer them. What else is there? Sayujya Sarashti. Samipya means to be in the proximity of the Lord, to have the Lord's personal association all the time. That's also very appealing. Devotees want that. They don't like to be separated from the Lord. Salokya means to worship, to be on the same planet as the Lord. When Krishna comes to, generally when before we go back to Godhead, Krishna comes to Goloka or comes to Gokula Vrindavan, and we participate in those leelas with him. That may also be considered a kind of Salokya Mukti. But then what is the other one? Sayujya, Sarashti, Samipya, Salokya, and Sarupya. That's what we're discussing today. To have a bodily form exactly resembling that of the Lord. With one exception, only Krishna has the Srivatsa. Only the Lord Narayana has the Srivatsa. The devotees who appear like him with Sarupya Mukti, they don't actually have that. That's the only difference. So he had Sarupya Mukti here. Now another thing is this elephant. Prabhupada is talking, he's very strong, very stout, big body, but his intelligence is not, doesn't match. But elephants are very intelligent in their own way. They particularly they have memory. Do not ever offend an elephant because they don't forget. I know, remember when I was in South India, I went on Padayatra in the 1980s. And there was a boy who was teasing the elephant for the Padayatra party. Everybody was coming and giving this elephant peanuts, so this boy was coming and giving the elephant rupee coins instead. And the elephant got mad at the boy and took his trunk and smacked the boy with his trunk and knocked the boy off into a wall, and the boy hit his head on the wall and he died. Elephants. And on the other hand, if you come back even years later, just like this, I don't know if she's still alive. We used to have this elephant Gulab Kali in Mayapur. She's gone, I think, now. Right. So I was there in Mayapur many years ago, and then after many years, I came back, and she still remembered me, evidently. They have good memories, elephants. but very dull compared to their strength, not the same. So the Muni cursed the king of Duryodhana to become an elephant. But this is the most significant thing here. Srila Prabhupada says the curse was indirectly a benediction because by undergoing one life as an elephant, Indrajit Maharaj ended the reactions for all the sins of his previous life. It's understood that when one is a king, one will commit sinful activities because kings, generally, they're very passionate and they surround themselves with opulence. And whenever you have gold, you also have to have illicit sex and meat-eating and intoxication. I won't go so far as to say that the king was engaged in these ways, but it would seem as if he had committed some sort of sinful activities in his previous life, and those have to be dealt with. Whatever we do in this life, we are going to have to deal with it in one way or another in the next life. So it's advisable that we do not commit activities that have a karmic reaction of any sort, in particular the activities that have a sinful reaction, papa. So he was given this special dispensation that he could burn up all of his karma that was awaiting. What is that kind of karma called? Huh? What, there are two divisions of karma. What are those? Yeah, the words I'm thinking of are prarabdha karma. That means what we're undergoing in this life. And aprarabdha karma means what is not yet undergoing, but it's already been set in motion. You see? And aprarabdha karma also has three divisions. Does anyone know what those are? There's a... There's different terms, actually, that are used. Bija, kutastha, the different terminology is used. But one of them is the seed. That is the activity, particularly with a sinful activity, there's a seed, and the seed is the desire to perform that activity. When you actually perform the activity itself, you have planted that seed. So the seed is in the ground, and you're watering it, but it has not yet sprouted. And then there's, after some time, the seed has actually fructified and sprouted. It's come above the ground, but it's not yet borne the full fruit. See? So these are all the three stages of aprarabdha karma, and those are very significant. They really do affect us just as much as does our prarabdha karma. The only difference is that prarabdha karma is what we're experiencing in this life. It's limited. It's inexorable. You cannot get over it. You have to burn it up. And it's manifest. All the others are unmanifest. But the problem with the aprarabdha karma in any of those three stages, whether as the seed, as the fructified seed, or as the sapling, you have to deal with it, and it will affect you. How does it affect us? At what level? Psychology. At the level of samskar. Some translate the word samskar as instinct, or you can say psychological tendency. We have a tendency to commit a particular activity because the seed has been planted already in the subtle body. This is why it's so significant that when Gajendra was touched by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary, the subtle body was also purified of all this stuff, all this kind of thing. And the gross material body was also purified. Both of them. Agnana bantanat vimukta. He was purified of all that stuff. So, one's consciousness is ensnared by this psychological tendency. And how do you see this? There's a nice text for the yogis in the yoga school, Sankhya Yoga. It's called Lakshmi Tantra. Lakshmi Tantra describes the process of japa in great detail. And there it says that when one sits down to chant japa, one comes face to face with what? Your subtle body. And all the desires and all the contamination that is attendant upon that subtle body, you have to deal with it. Someone once asked a great yogi, how can I make spiritual advancement? What do I need to work on? And he said, well, whatever comes into your mind at the time that you're chanting your japa, that's where you need to focus your efforts and making spiritual advancement. The state of our subtle body at the time of death is determining where we're going. What's another good indicator? What are you dreaming about at night? That is the state of our subtle body. What our mind and intelligence and false ego are full of, those things will manifest in some subtle form in our dreams at night, swapna. There are different stages of consciousness that are described in the Upanishads. They are called avasthas. There is, first of all, there is jagriti, that's waking state, and then there is sleep, swapna, dream state. There's dreamless sleep, and finally there's turiya state, which is beyond those. Sushupti is deep sleep without dreams. And then finally there's turiya, beyond those things. When one goes to sleep at night, it is considered to be a liberated state. If you're in dreamless sleep, sushupti, it's considered to be mukti. And because you are liberated at that point, your body is rejuvenated. And then when you wake up, you come out of it, and you, oh, it's just the same prarabdha karma I have to deal with again. the same after effects of my previous activities, here they are waiting for me again. But while one is in sushruti, that is considered to be liberation. And of course, turiya is beyond the tendency to wake up. Turiya is beyond the tendency to come back into this karmic tabernacle, as Prabhupada says. Anyway, but the subtle body has to be purified. And this is the program of particularly Sankhya philosophy and yoga philosophy. Yoga practice, I should say, because Sankhya provides the theory, yoga provides the lab, as it were. When you go to school, you know, you have your college class, and then you have your laboratory, you have to apply it. So Sankhya is the theory, yoga is the practice, or the application of that theory. And by yoga, the mind is extricated from all of these mundane entanglements, and hopefully one becomes elevated beyond even aprarabdha karma, what to speak of prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma, you simply have to deal with it. It's something like, what is that analogy we give? When you get on an airplane going for New York, you are going to New York. Unless there are terrorists on board, you are definitely going to go to New York. You cannot open the door and walk out of the airplane when it's 30,000 feet above the ground. You cannot hijack the plane unless you yourself are a terrorist. You're going to go to New York. And so that's what prarabdha karma is like. You cannot change it. Of course, through Krishna consciousness, we can change it. But Krishna consciousness is more powerful than that, because by Krishna consciousness, we can also change the aprarabdha karma, and that's what we need to be doing. That is where our japa needs to go. We need to be so focused that we're working on our psychological tendencies as much as our particular or specific or current material desires. Because our material desires are constantly mutable. They're always in a state of flux. They're always changing according to our association. Sangat sanjayate kama. Karanam guna sangosya sad asad yoni janmasu. That's what impels us on from one body to another, either a good body or a bad body. But what is the more fundamental level of consciousness that we need to be working on? The very tendency to try to enjoy separately from Krishna. That's not so easy to get rid of. We can elevate ourselves. We can even become as elevated as Gajendra was. We can become as elevated as Agastya Muni was. But unless we elevate ourselves beyond the tendency to ignore Krishna, that's called Ishad Apetha in the, 11th canto, to turn away from Krishna, to become averse to God, unless we rout out that tendency, we are going to come back. In one form or another, it just depends on our particular aprarabdha karma, which is already planted, already waiting for us. So, number one, take care of your gross material body, what it's doing now, here, in this life. Number two, take care of the karma that's waiting for you, that has already been planted but is not yet fructified or is not yet sprouted. That can be done by Krishna consciousness. And then finally, take care of the seeds of desire that have not yet even been planted through activities but are sitting there within our psyche. Take care of those things as well. So we see Krishna consciousness is like the nuclear physics of consciousness. We're we're poking in there at the molecular level and really trying to affect some fundamental change in our consciousness. And all this is affected through chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But it's not so easy to do unless we're very determined. And that's why we have so many stories here, like the story of Gajendra and other stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam, just to see. Sooner or later, if we are reading these books carefully, we will find someone that we can identify with. Someone who is in the position that we find ourselves in. And even if we can't, it's guaranteed that we will someday, sooner or later, find ourselves in the position of one of these devotees. That's why the stories are here. Like we were mentioning the other day, Draupadi. Everyone is going to be smashed at one point. The process of Maya is such that sooner or later we're going to have everything taken away from us, and we're going to find ourselves in an utterly helpless situation in which no one cares, and no one comes to our aid. And at that point we can chant very sincerely, as Kunti Devi also notes in Srimad Bhagavatam. So anyway, these are a few things we can learn from this wonderful story of Gajendra, the elephant, great devotee of Lord Vishnu. Here we see he's attained the perfection of life. His body became spiritual. He became freed from that curse. He went back home, back to Godhead, in his Siddha Deha, his perfected spiritual body. And he became another, again, an associate in Vaikuntha of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Narayana. Very beautiful story. Not only this King Indradyumna, but also Maharaj Huhu was benefited by the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All these stories are here. So we'll read more about these things in coming verses, beginning with text 11, and finish up the chapter. But I'll stop there. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
Yeah, in the Bhagavatam it mentions about like Maharaj, he became attached to a deer and he took birth as a deer. And then you have the case of Nalukubar and Manibriva, they were forgetful and drinking and lusting and they were cursed. But in the case of Indradyumna, it seems like he was absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And it's hard to understand a little bit how it was a benediction, because it seems that you're absorbed like that.
He went back to Godhead. What's hard to understand? He got the complete perfection. Indradyumna Maharaj, your question, I think, the essence of your question is... if he had continued his austerities and meditation as Indradyumna Maharaj, well, you know, I'm not in a position to really speculate on why that was arranged that way. Either way, he would have gone back to Godhead, probably speaking. But if nothing else, one thing we can learn from this pastime is that offenses that are committed even inadvertently will have the effect. So we have to be very careful. Even if we're unknowingly offending someone, we have to suffer for that. And one could ask then, well, why is that? Seems like a very stringent system. It seems a little harsh. But I think the problem is that, as I said, we have this fundamentally sullied psychology in which we take things very cheaply and easily. Unless this were the case, it would be very difficult for us to really take it that seriously. That's my feeling about it, at least. So Indradyumna Maharaj, he would have gone back to Godhead. He could have continued his austerities at Kulashrama in South India. But how would we have this wonderful story of Gajendra Mokshan if the Lord hadn't acted otherwise? He would have been liberated alone instead of us being liberated by hearing his story. So, it's such a wonderful katha. Yes, Prabhuji.
yesterday, last night, in your class, you're speaking a lot of Braj Bhakti. And I was hearing one lecture, Prabhupada, the title of the lecture was, Why Become God? Become higher, even better than God. Become higher than God. And Srila Prabhupada, a lot of, from what I've seen, he emphasizes a lot on spontaneous service and not you know, not motivated with any. So my question was, do you know? Can you explain about? I've heard about a lot of this like spiritual conditioning, like going back into the spiritual world, depending on our, you know, cultivating a certain devotional service in this life will lead us to a certain condition in the spiritual world. Instead of going to, you know, Goloka Vrindavan, we might go to Vaikuntha or something.
I hinted at that. There are many varieties of spiritual worlds available for us. And there are many stripes of Krishna consciousness available to us. Which one are you going to go for? That's your choice. It's already faded anyways. You have a choice and you don't have a choice at the same time. But that's not the topic of today's class, so does anybody else have a question on today? Garnatana.
We see the story of Maharaj Ambarish, where Durasamuni was punished by the law because Maharaj Ambarish was faultless. In this case, Maharaj Indradhumna was also faultless. And I'm just wondering, you know, it wasn't me had to pay the price. Did Agastya Muni had to pay the price? So.
For cursing Indradhumna Maharaj. Well, I don't know if that's stated. We'll read on and see what he says. But at any rate, I think it's not really a mistake, or it's not, you know, it's not a bad thing that this happened, because after all, we have this wonderful Leela of the Lord coming to save his devotee Gajendra as a result of that curse only. Had that curse not occurred, this whole pastime would not have happened. Several chapters here in the eighth canto. 2, 3, 4 chapters are dealing with this wonderful Gajendra Mokshan story. So it's all Krishna's Leela, one way or the other. And it gives us this wonderful, wonderful Krishna conscious narration.
Like in the Gita, it says lust, anger, and greed are the gateway to hell. But when great personalities like Agastya Muni, that anger is of a different category.
It's not clear. It's kind of like in the few chapters ago, it said that this crocodile was also out of anger. He was biting on the leg of the Gajendra. So, you know, it's hard to say. You can interpret in terms of mundane anger. You can also interpret it as in terms of, you know, this is the arrangement of the Yoga Maya for the sake of Leela. It's really hard to say. I mean, even for that matter, in Krishna Leela, certainly in Ram Leela and also Krishna Leela, our acharyas, in fact, even Shukdev Goswami himself has said that the example of Krishna with the gopis, wherein the gopis were left brokenhearted in Vrindavan after Krishna left to Mathura and later Dwarka, that is just meant to teach the conditioned souls in this material world what kind of suffering will accrue from this mundane boy-girl kind of relationship that we're all so taken in by. And certainly Ramchandra in his Leela, Prabhupada comments extensively in the ninth canto that it's meant to show men how much suffering will result as a result of attachment to a woman. Ramchandra, all of his sufferings, he had to go through so much trouble, so many people killed, monkeys killed, demons killed, such a big deal was made just because of Ramchandra's attachment to Sita. Interpreted on a mundane level, you can say like that. So you can take lessons either way. I'm not going to comment on which one you should, which approach you should take. Either one is applicable. This is Leela. It is arranged as by Yoga Maya for the purpose of our instruction, if nothing else. Is that okay? Jai Keshav Prabhu.
Could you speak on the importance of not being complacent, not taking things for granted, like you mentioned a little bit earlier?
Well, this is our problem, and it becomes an increasing problem, I think, because generally in the modern day and age, when we take to Krishna consciousness, we're coming from a background of pretty pungent tamoguna and rajoguna. so we don't really have to worry about the dangers of sattva-guna. We've been spared that headache by the process of maya. But it does become a big issue, and we should be afraid of the fact that Prabhupada warns, we should be afraid of the fact that the last snare of maya is the result of hyper-sattva-guna. When one becomes fixed in knowledge, what does it mean to be fixed in knowledge? All the gates of your body are illumined by awareness. We're not, as like Tamal Krishna Goswami used to say, before you can become Krishna conscious, you have to first become conscious. You know, we're not even conscious, really, because that's the effect of tamoguna. You know, unconscious, distracted, and conscious. Those are the three gunas, you know, from lower to higher. So the nature of sattva guna is that one becomes aware. Awareness expands. It is as if one's consciousness increases. You become more conscious than previously. That is sattva guna. Now, the problem is that when that happens, there's a couple of things that Krishna mentions throughout chapters 14 through 17, 18 of Bhagavad Gita. One becomes full of knowledge when one is fully aware, obviously. But that knowledge conditions one not only with pride, because those who have more knowledge, they do become proud, but complacence also. Sukham but not. One becomes bound up by a concept of happiness, or as you said, complacence. That's a real problem on a mundane level, but when it goes even beyond the mundane level and you approach liberation, particularly Sayujya Mukti, as we were discussing, then you begin to recognize that actually I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a minute form. And if one is not very careful, and in particular if one is not very much blessed to retain the sensibility that is imparted by the Vaishnava acharyas about this realization, then one can be carried away by that also. And that is a very, very strong attachment. It is not comparable to any other attachment in any world, whether in Svarga Loka or in Nartaka Loka or in this one. We should not underestimate the power and the allure and the attachment that results from jnana. It is a heavyweight opponent of Krishna consciousness, and if we haven't suffered under its influence, it's only because we're unqualified still. Those who have the jnani nature, they get a sense of this, and it's pretty frightening, actually. But jnana is definitely a much more formidable a threat to our Krishna consciousness than is karma. Karma, it's easy to see through it if you have a little knowledge. But because you have a little knowledge, the jnana becomes super attractive, and it's really a heavy thing, because it's not really a material attachment, as we said earlier. Some people consider that to be a state of liberation. And that's pretty frightening. If you're already liberated such that you have no attraction to Krishna consciousness, that's pretty frightening. Therefore, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur says, it's like hell. It's like hell. Kaivalya Narakayate. So, on a mundane level, sattva-guna will bind us with this sense of complacent and pride and, you know, knowledge and these things, because I always tell people that when I went to near Udupi, from Govardhan, we go to South India in the winter because it's too cold to Govardhan. So we stayed near Udupi, and there was a community of Brahmins there. Very nice, pakka, South Indian Brahmins, Madhvas, all of them, worshipping Venkataramana. And there was a temple there just near where we were staying. Every day they all come to the temple, all the families come, and they do puja and they do kirtan, and very, very nice day. It's just like an ISKCON temple, except that it's in Kannada instead of English. So they're doing their nice things there, and they're all speaking in Sanskrit to one another. Their kids are all pakka, and they're all Krishna conscious and happy and clean, and just everything sattvic and wonderful. And the result is that nobody has any intensity about going back to Godhead at all. So I never thought that I would have to preach against Varnashram Dharma there, but we were doing that. Because that is the condition of sattva-guna. That's the problem. On a mundane level. And then, as I said already, it gets worse. If you transcend even that, then you have to deal with this sayujya idea, this oneness idea, and that is the most dangerous thing. Is that okay? Elaborate answer to a simple question.
It's good, actually. And as far as dealings among devotees, as far as complacency there, or being unconscious, like the story of Rupa Goswami, also Rupa Sanatana, in his meditation, he was seeing some lila of Radha and Krishna, and this cripple was walking by.
Mm.
And something happened in his meditation, and he laughed.
Yeah.
So the cripple guy thought, oh, he's laughing at me.
Which is exactly what we see here in the case of Agastya Muni, with regards to Indrajitna Maharaj. Very similar. It's not like he was in Maya. He was doing devotional service, it would seem, from what Prabhupada said here. So that's Uddhava's point, that we have to be very careful, you know, not take it very cheaply, because it's, you know, even a little slip. What does Shakespeare say? There's many a slip twixt the cup and the lip. Or as Prabhupada says, there are accidents even on royal roads. Not so easy. Gornataraj, you wanted to add something?
No, I just had a question.
Huh.
What is the harm if the community is only Sankarsan engaged in service to God, and they're also obviously attracting others by their example? It's, whether one serves here or serves back in the spiritual world, what difference does it make? It's service, isn't it?
That's right. For a devotee, there's no difference. Apituliartha darshanam saragapa varga narakeshu apituliartha darshanam narayana parasarvena katashina bibhyati. For the devotee who is completely serving Lord Narayana, he doesn't make any distinction. He can go to hell and it's devotional service. He can go to Svargaloka and it's devotional service. He can go back to Godhead and it's devotional service. Yes.
What activities does one perform
when we get Savukti Mukti?
Yes.
Well, the same activities of devotional service are there. We can read, it's many examples are found in Srimad Bhagavatam. You see everyone walking around in Vaikuntha, they all look like Lord Narayana, but some of them are doing kirtan, some of them are doing seva, some of them are doing yajnas, some of them are doing, you know, whatever. Thank you so much. Just the body form is different.
Just the body is
different. The body is, yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's not like you can only have one at a time, obviously, because those who are, the example I just gave in Vaikuntha, obviously they also have Salokya. Once in a while they get Samipya as well. You know? Sarupya is there, Sarashti. There's no dearth of anything in the spiritual world. So that's what we were saying. Liberation, it's not monolithic. There's all varieties of liberation. And, you know, depending on what you cultivate, what desire you cultivate, what blessings you receive from your gurus, then you can focus your efforts in a particular way. And we know in our line that there are four or five different ways that we can do that. You can focus in Dasya, you can focus in Sakya, you can focus in Vatsalya, or you can focus in Madhurya. Chiefly, we're focusing in our line, Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, two ways. One of them is Madhurya, and the other one is Sakya. Those are prominent. But it's not, you know, it's not by any means exclusive. Some people preach that exclusivity, but it's not, certainly not what Prabhupada was presenting.
Madhava, who do you want to answer?
I'm sorry?
I couldn't understand what you said just now. What was the last sentence that you said?
There are five rasas that one could cultivate in Raganuga Bhakti. So, you know, two of them are prominent in our sampradaya. One of them is Sakya and the other one is Madhurya, especially Madhurya. But all of them are bona fide. All of them are encouraged and nourished in Srila Prabhupada's books, we see. So.
No.
appreciates serving his devotees more than the service rendered to him. So maybe when Augustine became and Indrajini Maharaj was thinking of Krishna, but when the devotee comes, one has to give a proper reception. It's like when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj was visiting one of his disciples, and he was busy doing the giving worship, and he did not receive Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj said that is not the best attitude.
Not a kisa. Yeah. So, many, many ways that we can interpret this particular occurrence. You know, that's another one. One is that we don't want to take this very cheaply, because even an inadvertent offense can be there. Another one is that serving the devotees is more important than serving the Lord. So many different things you can interpret. Yes?
Similar to that, Dr. Siddhartha was speaking and he was wondering where everybody else was. I think it was only Srila Prabhupada there. Yeah. He was hearing from him.
When they went to see Sheshashaya in Koshi, in Brajmandala. Prabhupada, they had a Brajmandala Parikrama, and some of them went to see Sheshashaya at Koshikalan, in northern part of Braj, the Mahavishnu deity. And others stayed back to hear Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and Srila Prabhupada stayed to hear from his Guru Maharaj, and his Guru Maharaj was very pleased by that.
But he said that they have God, but they've only seen stone. And they say that one should hear first, but because they went to go see this deity, they're seeing only stone.
Yeah.
That's what I have heard.
Yeah, this is important because, you know, we were talking about deity worship earlier and touching the deity and the benefit that can come from that. It all depends on hearing. Otherwise, a dog can come into the temple and also see the deity. A dog can also touch the deity, if possible. But what benefit does he get? He gets the benefit, but the Krishna consciousness is not awakened by that process. The Krishna consciousness is awakened, you know, through hearing, particularly. Gar? You're raising your hand?
Yeah. We see the example like the Lord touch and within the body be purified, the whole body got purified, the Khan. Says that Kali Kala Rama Rupa Krishna Avatara, we're constantly chanting. How do you, it's like simultaneously yes and no, like Rama Rupa is Krishna Avatara and yes and no?
There's no difference. That's the thing. When we are chanting, through the chanting of the holy name, we come to recognize that the holy name is not different from the form and the qualities and the pastimes, etc., etc., etc. It happens through the agency of Sankirtana, through the agency of chanting, because that's the Yuga Dharma. But they're all the same. There's no real distinction between the deity of the Lord and the holy name. There's no distinction. It takes time, generally. Not necessarily, but generally it does. But the first thing we have to realize is who we are. The first thing we have to realize is what is spirit. If you don't know what spirit is, you can't appreciate a spiritual form. And these things are all spiritual. Even the Srimad Bhagavatam is spiritual. Even when we're doing deity worship, it's spiritual. Although there is a marble component there, for sure, you know. Therefore, in the Archana Paddhati, Prabhupada is mentioning, there is a consideration of Antara Puja and Bahya Puja, external Puja and internal Puja, and both of them have to be cultivated accordingly, yathavidhi, according to the injunctions. To realize the spiritual nature is really not that easy. But it is the first point. Until we become Brahman realized, then devotional service is always, well, we call it prakrita bhakti, materialistic devotion. That's the domain of the Kanishta Adhikari. His devotion is more or less material, on the material platform. He'll see a distinction between one deity and another, between one form of the Lord and another, There are distinctions, but we are not qualified to appreciate those distinctions until we appreciate their oneness. This is the point. Have to temper this with realization. Achintya bheda bheda. We have to temper our realization of abheda with our realization of bheda. That's a little too abstract, maybe. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.